of the State Government, Finance, Policy, and Elections Committee, today being Wednesday, February 9th, 2022. Welcome, everybody. We have a good agenda today with several bills, but I just want to mention that, just adjusting things here a bit, that other committees have done this, and for the sake of those who are online, for the sake of those who are in the committee hearing room, we're going to do a roll call. It enables us to make sure that we have quorum and that the public and everybody are on the same page as far as membership of the committee being here. So with that, Ms. Wilson, would you go ahead and call the roll?
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Here.
Senator Howe.
Present.
Senator Carlson. Senator Clausen.
Present.
Senator Pate.
Present.
Senator Curran.
Here.
Senator Pratt.
Here.
Senator Osmick.
Here.
Senator Carlson. Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Okay, quorum being present. Thank you all very much, members. That's very helpful. And so we will be going ahead then and doing bills today. I'm going to go back over to the testimony table, and our Vice Chair, Senator Howe, will take over the gavel. So here we go, Senator Howe, and I will go to the table. I will come back to close the meeting.
So, Senator Kiffmeyer, Chair Kiffmeyer, you have Senate File 2957. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move Senate File 2957. And then I have an amendment, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to go ahead and apply the amendment at the same time. And I believe this is the A2 amendment to Senate File 2957. I will move the A2. By the way, members, this is a delete all. Amendment as well.
So Senator Kiffmeyer moves the A2 amendment to get the bill, delete all, to get the bill in the shape that she desires. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, vote aye.
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 All those opposed, vote nay. Motion carries. Senator Kiffmeyer, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We do have testifiers today that can give additional information for us as well. To let you know, this bill was heard in the Pension Commission last night. And so this is the language that they adopted that you have here today for the delete all. So, but it did come out with a vote out of the Pension Commission. So we appreciate that. And Mr. Chair and members, we passed a bill a couple years ago that had to do with helping that those who were already retired and had a phased retirement plan. They'll go into this in much more detail with Ms. Stringy. But what it did was enable them. They had a cap on hours and salary and a variety of things. And during the pandemic, we had such an urgent need for these providers that we passed a law that allowed them to do that. Since then, there are just a couple things that were an issue with that particular language that affected some of our providers. And so there's a fix in this bill to make sure that they don't have to pay back money that was never intended for them to have to pay back. And so significant harm to them, so this bill will be helpful to them. And then it also cleans up the language in a variety of other ways that I think is helpful to this. But with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to ask that our testifier come forward and I think can give a a much better, more detailed explanation.
Could we maybe move the computer so we can see Ms. Stringy?
Sure.
Thank you, Ms. Stringy. Could you introduce yourself to the committee and continue with your testimony?
Chair Howe, my name is Amy Stringy. I am the policy coordinator for PARA. I can walk you through what the bill does. The bill is an extension of two exceptions for healthcare workers. The first exception is the phased retirement agreement. And as Senator Kiffmeyer said, the phased retirement agreement is for anyone who is over 62 and has entered into this agreement with their employer. Their agreement has certain restrictions, such as a reduction in hours. And if the member exceeds that, then their pension benefit is stopped and they're in violation of the PRO, and then they need the 30-day break in service before they can receive their retirement benefit. So the bill extends this exception for healthcare workers.
Excuse me, Ms. Stringy, could you pull the microphone a little closer?
Sorry, can you hear me now? Are we good? Okay, so I can recap my summary that you guys didn't hear. I apologize. So the phased retirement agreement is an agreement between members and their employer, and with that agreement comes certain restrictions. Example, they have to have an hour threshold that they can't exceed. If they exceed that hour threshold, then their violation, they are considered to be in violation, and their benefit stops, and they need a 30-day break in service before they can come back and receive their benefit and then work as a retiree. So the phased, so this bill extends two exceptions. One, as I said, is the phased retirement agreement, and this allows healthcare workers to continue in their phased retirement agreement, but not be subject to any of the limitations put forward by the phased retirement agreement. The bill also addresses retiree earnings limitations. PARA has a statute that if a retiree goes back to employment in a public employer, their benefit is reduced if they have employment, and that is for every $2 they earn, their pension benefit is reduced by $1. So this bill exempts healthcare workers from that. When the original bill was passed back, I believe, a couple of years ago, there was language requiring that a member must have entered into the phased retirement agreement prior to the effective date, which was 5/13/20. We had a couple individuals that were exempted that had a phased retirement agreement after that date. As a result, they are currently in overpayment status. This bill addresses that situation as well. It allows us to not collect that overpayment, and because they would not have been in violation of the phased retirement agreement. And I can elaborate any more or answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Stringy. We'll go to questions. Any questions from the committee? Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a question, a clarifying question to some degree, perhaps Senator Kiffmeyer or Ms. James can answer. And it has to do with lines 1.10 and 1.11. In the original bill, and I'll let you look at those.
Yes.
All right. In the original bill, the language talked about services, and then it had to provide healthcare related services or long-term care. And that's been replaced with include any person who provides operational support. And I just would like maybe a definition of that. I'm just not sure what that means, or does it expand the number of people?
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a detail area that I think Ms. Stringy can address for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Stringy.
Chair Howe. So from our perspective, we will implement this as if the member that's on the phased retirement or a retiree who has returned to work, if they're providing support to a direct care patient environment. And yes, that's vague, but we leave a lot of discretion up to the employer to determine whether or not they fit that need for the employer.
Senator Claussen, follow up?
Yes, thank you. Just for clarification, would it be better to actually name the position of these people? Because it really, operational support to me means custodians. I mean, it could mean any number of people, and I'm just wondering why we're using that, why we're using that term versus being more specific in who would be included in this class of people.
Ms. Stringy.
Chair Howe, the reason that we are being a little vague in this definition is that when the original bill was implemented, the definition itself was very broad. And as a result, we have about 9 people who have done this exemption for the phased retirement. If we would narrow the definition as you're suggesting, those people would now be in violation of their phased retirement agreement because they would no longer fit the exemption, given that this bill is going back in time and addressing a couple issues for us. So we're very cautious to narrow that definition in statute so that we don't create other overpayments and unintentional consequences.
Senator Claussen.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that explanation, and I think I really support the bill. I mean, those people were critical during this really emergency that we had nationwide as well as here in Minnesota. So I think it's a great bill. I think one of the things I'm going to look at, because we've had similar people that have been called back, teachers that are retired, so I might look at how we might address that issue and down the road here a little bit. But thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Lincheski, I don't know if you're on, if you'd like to add any input or if you're okay.
No, thank you, Senator Howe. I think Ms. Stringy gave a very thorough description of the bill.
Thank you. So with that, seeing no other questions from the committee, we will go. Chair Kiffmeyer?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So just to let you know, members, first of all, they have to have a phased retirement plan. So this is not just anybody in that. So they've already retired, but what's different here is that lifting that cap. So, but they have to have been retired or a phased retirement plan to even qualify for this. So it's really rather narrow, and it is not a large number of people. But to those who are, and in large part, Hennepin County is a big, big thing for them. That's who benefits from this and has the impact and has worked with me along both the original and the language today. But I ask the question, too, this is not a large pool that even qualifies, much less those who are willing to work more hours than what phased retirement already gives them. So I think this is really quite narrow and very specific. And by the way, any of those who have a phased retirement plan are eligible to work to the max of that, whatever that is, and that's really quite a bit.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So I would Senator Kiffmeyer moves that Senate File 2957 be as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to general orders. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Madam Chair, your bill's on your way to general orders, and now you've got the next bill. Members, we're going to take up Senate File 2818. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So, Senate File 2818, this language that you will see in the bill has to do with making sure that only employees of the Attorney General's office are providing the services of the Attorney General's office. So what we want is state government employees that are hired in the office to do that work. Now you will see quite a bit more language. And matter of fact, I would like to ask Ms. James if she would just walk through the bill for everyone. I think that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, did you want to move the A1 amendment or get the...
Yes, Mr. Chair. To? I would move the A1 amendment to Senate File 2818.
Senator Kiffmeyer moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape she prefers. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Motion carries. The bill is now in the shape you prefer. Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I get a copy of that amendment, please?
Mr. Chair, it was posted by staff ahead of time.
Got it.
All right, Ms. James, could you walk through the bill for us?
Mr. Chair and members, the bill does a few things. First of all, it limits what sort of employees are permitted to provide legal services, and it limits it to the employee of the Attorney General's office, an employee or another Minnesota government entity, employee or an employee of the federal government entity under an agreement with the Attorney General's office. And then the next portion of the bill limits the source of money that can be used to pay those employees or to pay contractors. So the sentence beginning on line 1.14 says that the sole source of compensation for the employees of the Attorney General performing legal services on behalf of the state have to be from appropriations under this chapter. This chapter is Chapter 8. There are two statutory appropriations in Chapter 8, and the summary identifies what those pay for. Excuse me. And then in the amendment adds that appropriations made by law can also be used to as a source of compensation for those employees. And then the next sentence in the bill that begins on line 1.16 says that when the Attorney General is authorized to contract with additional people for providing legal services, the sole consideration for those legal services has to be the amount that's bargained for in the contract that the Attorney General enters into with those contract employees. And then lines 2.1 through 2.2 of the bill say that only the listed employees are allowed to perform work on the leased premises of the Attorney General. And then lines 2.2 through the end have a couple of caveats, say nothing in this section prohibits certain behavior. Nothing in the bill prohibits the Attorney General from entering into a settlement agreement with a defendant arising from a case that's litigated or prosecuted by a federal government entity, a local government entity, or the Attorney General's office in another state. And then also nothing in the bill prohibits the Attorney General from employing and providing office space to unpaid interns.
Thank you, Ms. James. And now I believe, Madam Chair, do you want to go to testifiers?
Yes, I would like to have testifiers, Mr. Chair.
I think the first testifier we have would be Annette Meeks with the Freedom Foundation. Ms. Meeks, could you identify yourself for the committee and then proceed with your testimony?
Indeed. My name is Annette Meeks, and I'm the CEO of the Freedom Foundation of Minnesota. We're a nonprofit research organization that focuses on highlighting market-based solutions, focusing on some of the toughest issues facing our state.
Ms. Meeks, if I can interrupt, please bring that microphone closer to you. Thank you.
I hope this is better. I'm so excited to be here. It's been 2 years since I've been up here, so thank you. A cornerstone of our work is government.
Oh, turn it on, please.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Is the microphone turned on?
You have to really lean into it.
All
right.
Is that better?
In. Thank you.
A cornerstone of our work is government transparency, which is why I'm with you here today. We are in strong support of Senate File 2818. Several years ago, a trend began in private philanthropy where donors would fund specific projects that would in turn hire staff to be placed in state or local government jobs. Oftentimes, these employees are paid directly by the nonprofit entity that received a tax-deductible gift from a wealthy donor. We first became aware of this process in Minnesota when the Rockefeller Foundation founded its Resilient Cities program in 2013 and committed $164 million towards hiring chief resilient officers in 100 cities around the globe. Minneapolis received a grant of $129,508 from the foundation in 2017 to fund the city's first chief resilient officer. That position was filled by former State Representative Kate Knuth, who left that position after 7 months on the job. That very same year, according to IRS filings, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg's private foundation, the Bloomberg Family Foundation, donated $5.6 million to develop New York University School of Law's State Energy and Environmental Impact Center. Since that time, we've not only been following what they've done around the country, but we've noticed in Minnesota, the New York University School of Law has hired 17 attorneys around the country, placed them in 11 state attorney general's offices, including two here in Minnesota. The latest, of course, has been a billionaire Mark Zuckerberg, who contributed $400 million to a Chicago nonprofit to distribute to fund our 2020 elections around the country. That is equal to the amount the entire federal government dedicated towards 2020 election funding. Imagine, if you will, several years from now, a Republican is elected Minnesota Attorney General. That newly minted chief law enforcement officer of our state would receive an email from, let's say, the National Rifle Association, their foundation, or the National Right to Life Foundation, and ask the AG if they would like to receive two full-time paid employees paid for by the nonprofit, not by the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. They would then receive a multi-million dollar gift from a conservative donor through a nonprofit. The cries of outrage, as well they should be, from the news media, the legislature, and from my organization would be deafening. The legislature is granted the power to fund legitimate functions of our state government. We do not want elected officials, whether they be Republican or Democrat, soliciting billionaires to fund official functions of those offices. That's why I'm here today. We strongly support the elimination of privately funded government employees at all levels of state government. Only then will we have true transparency for what our government is paying for and, frankly, the services that it should receive. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Meeks. Any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, we'll go to the next testifier, Ms. Laura Takenholz from the Attorney General's Office. Yeah, please pull that mic in and lean in and state your name for the committee and continue with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Laura Takenholtze, and I am the Legislative Director for the Office of Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. So I'd like to preface my remarks by saying that I only recently made the transition from legislative staffer to my current role, and so there's a lot about this office that I'm still learning. If there are questions, I will do my best to answer them, but I may need to get back to you on some of that. in regards to this bill, I'm not prepared to comment on the reasoning, the origins, or the context, such as the assertion of nonprofit payments, because I only just heard it here today. I was a little disappointed that no one had reached out to our office about it beforehand, considering it directly impacts the Attorney General's office. I did reach out to staff myself, and they responded that the bill author would present this at the hearing. By the way, I do very much appreciate the timely response of staff. in regards to the text of the bill, it is not well received. Over 60 years ago, the Minnesota Supreme Court made clear in Slezak v. Estigen that, and I quote, The Attorney General is the Chief Law Officer of the state. His powers are not limited to those granted by statute, but include extensive common law powers inherent in his office. He may institute, conduct, and maintain all such actions and proceedings as he deems necessary for the enforcement of the laws of the state, the preservation of order, and the protection of public rights. He is the legal advisor to the executive officers of the state, and the courts will not control the discretionary power of the Attorney General in conducting litigation for the state. As you know, it is the people of Minnesota who directly elect the Attorney General. It is the Attorney General who is empowered to make legal policy for the state. Efforts to infringe upon the authority and ability to execute the duties of the office serve to usurp the will of the voters. Instead of this body looking to restrict the constitutionally recognized authority of the Chief Law Officer, Minnesotans would be better served by turning back the tide of historical disinvestment in the office. In 1998, the Office of the Attorney General had 250 attorneys. Now there are less than 150. Funding is roughly the same as it was 20 years ago in actual dollars, not accounting for inflation. And in this time, cases have only grown in complexity. The tools of litigation have only become more sophisticated, and funding has not kept pace. The office has prioritized the essentials, new e-discovery and case management systems, but our staff is significantly underpaid compared to local county attorneys and the U.S. Attorney's Office. We regularly lose attorneys at 5 to 10 years of experience, forcing us to continually reinvest in talent. With respect to criminal cases, Minnesota's Chief Law Officer continues to request funding to hire more prosecutors, a request that's been denied year after year. Instead of seeking to infringe upon the authority and limit the ability to carry out the duties of the Attorney General, the legislature could use its own power and authority to allocate funding that would empower the Attorney General to hire more prosecutors, retain the talent of employees by keeping pace with the average salaries of other public sector attorneys in the area, and right-size the staffing of the backbone of the office, the ones who make the work of the Assistant Attorneys General possible and even more impactful. In closing, every elected office holds its own power and authority. Minnesotans are well served when these roles are respected, not restricted. The Attorney General respectfully but strongly opposes Senate File 2818.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier from the committee? Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Taken-Holtze, thank you for being here today. I do have some questions, and you kind of touched on a couple of them. I know that for the Attorney General's office that additional funding requests over the years have been denied. And currently, I think the funding currently is the same as it was in 2002. So it's a real flat budget that we've experienced, but we know that demands on the Attorney General's office continue to increase. I know in working with the Attorney General's office, many of the attorneys that I've worked with are relatively young. Can you talk a little bit about the turnover rate in the department? When I see so many young attorneys, I'm thinking that many of them do not look at this as a career ladder. And I'm just wondering if you could provide any information about the turnover rate of attorneys in the office.
You know, Senator Clausen, I'm not quite sure where this goes with the bill. I mean, is this, because we're really not talking about pay to the Attorney General's office and taking that up in this bill. I think that was discussed actually in the budget last year. I don't know if there'll be a supplemental budget bill coming forward to ask for more funding for the Attorney General's office, but I'll permit the testifier to respond. But keep in mind that keep the responses that pertain to the bill. This isn't a supplemental budget bill. So, Ms. Takenholtz, if you can respond shortly, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't comment on the turnover rate. I can say that the average salaries for an attorney at our office is about $101,000 compared to Ramsey, which is $115,000, Hennepin, $128,000, and the U.S. attorney, which is $144,000. I know that we regularly lose attorneys at 5 to 10 years of experience because they become extremely valuable. And of course, we're competing with private law firms, of course. But I'd have to get back to you on the turnover rate.
Thank you. Senator Claussen, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the latitude, and Ms. Holtze, thank you for that response. Given a lot of the younger, maybe less experienced attorneys in the office, I would guess that there are situations the Attorney General's office where there's needed really specialized legal counsel, people that have additional expertise. Now, as I look at this, if that is true, it looks as if this bill would remove that option. And therefore, I see as limiting really the power of the Attorney General's office and the work that the Attorney General would be doing. But if you could comment about specialized legal expertise that's needed, consultants that are used by the office, please.
Ms. Takenholtze.
First, I'd like to say we do have outstanding, high-quality attorneys, high talent, which I'm sure you know. And the issue there isn't so much the experience level of the attorneys; it's more the specialization. We have to do workers' comp claims, which are extremely extremely specialized. Subrogation claims. You know, we represent the agencies of the entire state, and so we have to handle all of those claims, some of which are very specialized. We would have to expand our office exponentially to specialize in each of those areas.
Okay. One more follow-up. I got a number of folks who want to ask questions. So,
very good. Just one more.
Mr. Chair, just real quick. Before Senator Claussen goes, I'm still having a hard time hearing Ms.
Could you, yeah,
Folsom.
Definitely lean in. Thank you. Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question, when the Attorney General's office does work for other state agencies, is there a chargeback system that's used? A chargeback to those agencies?
Ms. Takenholtze.
So, as I said, the office is complex. I'm still getting to know it. But as I understand it, there are different agreements with different state agencies. We may have partner revenue. So I can get back to you in more detail about that. But it's different for different state agencies.
Ms. Takenholtze, if you can provide that to the committee staff, and we'll distribute that. Senator Curran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Takenholtze, so far I haven't heard any information relating to the actual bill at hand. And so I'd be curious, how many Bloomberg-funded attorneys do you have working on behalf of the Attorney General's office, working on the specific activities that we're aware? The Alaskan Oil and Gas Reserve leasing, California's ability to trade emission credits with Quebec. I'm not sure that those are located in Minnesota yet. Ratepayers' disputes with FERC in New England and objecting to the challenge to decommission nuclear power plant in Massachusetts. How many total attorneys are assigned to those that are not Minnesota employees of the AG? How many of them are funded by the Bloomberg organization today?
Ms. Takenholtze.
Senator, I am not prepared to answer that question. I'm sorry. Like I said, I'm still getting to know the office.
With all due respect, Ms. Senator Holsey, you are the representative. Your office had ample notification to be prepared for the bill at hand. And so the number one issue, which we haven't heard any information on from the AG's office to date, is about the Bloomberg-funded bringing in outside organizations to operate under the guise of a Minnesota Attorney General. And so what I would ask is anybody online? We today have the flexibility. We appreciate that you're here in person, by the way. But we don't have, we have the ability to bring that people that actually understand or are deeply involved in this. Maybe the Attorney General himself or somebody that's been with the organization much longer. So it's very disrespectful to me, the legislative body, that this is where we're to discuss these issues. How can we thoroughly vet a bill when you choose not to provide any valid feedback or data? Very difficult for us. So I ask, I would ask that in the future that we're prepared.
May I respond to that, Mr. Chair?
Ms. Taken-Hosey, go ahead.
So the sequence of events was, I received notice that the hearing was posted on Friday evening. That's great. Nobody had reached out to our office regarding this bill. I reached out to staff on Monday to try to get some of this context. All I had to work with was the text of the bill. I knew nothing about the issue of Bloomberg. I wish I could provide you information, but I'm not prepared to at this time.
I got a follow-up. Senator Kiffmeyer, you want to make some comment? And then we'll go to Senator Carlson.
Well, on this topic, if someone wants to stick with this topic, but then I would like to address the committee.
Well, thank you.
Mr. Chair, to the topic or to this comment?
Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When will you have that information available?
I will have to go back to the office, and I will get it to you as quickly as I can.
Thank you. I would like that submitted in writing and provided to the committee at your earliest convenience. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Carlson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is from a little bit further back, and that is that is this frequent that we get attorneys that are funded by nonprofits and funded by, let's say, C3s that that accept donations or that they're funded without being reportable information, and I would like to go back and ask: is the Freedom Foundation, do they accept corporate donations, and are they a non-taxable organization and non-reportable?
Not the subject.
Senator Carlson, I think we're right now we're asking questions of Ms. Taken-Hosey, and we can bring Ms. Meeks back up, I guess, later. But right now, Ms. Taken-Hosey, if you can answer those questions.
So first, I'm not prepared to even accept the premise that any of our office is funded by a nonprofit. I will get back to you with information as soon as I can.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Carls.
Yes, thank you. Well, it was brought up that there was some nonprofits that are on the outside that are funding things. And I know the Freedom Foundation does accept donations from corporate donors. And also, I don't think there is a registered lobbyist for that organization. So the testimony here is in support of this bill, which generally is a definition of what a lobbyist does. So I think there's some broader examination of just what is the objection here of providing the kind of resources that the Attorney General needs statewide. There's a lot of specialized legal services that the Attorney General can't afford to have within the Attorney General's staff. And he has to be able to get the best from the outside to defend the state in many different venues or on many different subjects. So I'm thinking that what we're doing here is we're actually handcuffing the Attorney General from doing what the people expect him to do. And I guess that I find to be very concerning.
Well, Senator Carlson, I don't think that every citizen that comes down here to testify is a lobbyist, but but...
Sorry, you're muted, Mr. Chair, I think.
Well, I don't... But I will go to Senator Osmek for a comment on this, and then Senator Pratt.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yes. So, first of all, I think it would be very important to clarify some information at this time. First of all, this bill does not limit the Attorney General power, as was stated here.
I am not getting any audio from you. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
I think that's got to be on your end. We can hear you, and we're hearing everything here, so... Go ahead, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So this bill does not limit the Attorney General's power. Matter of fact, as Ms. James went over it on page 2, it specifically states nothing shall prohibit the Attorney General's office on doing the works, and also in regards to unpaid interns, or shall prohibit the office. So I do not see anything in here whatsoever. And this bill is not about the Attorney General's powers. It has to do with the source of funding for state government employees in the Attorney General's office. That is the purpose of this bill, and that is the subject of this bill, not Attorney General powers. However, if there needs to be some clarification, I will certainly be glad to listen to the Attorney General's office as this bill goes forward. If we need to do a belt and suspenders and make anything else more clear, we've tried to make it as clear as we could. In regards to the number of attorneys, prior to the current Attorney General, the office did have those employees, but it was the responsibility of the office to put forward their budgets and gain the support of the legislature in that funding. Since this Attorney General has been in office, and as I have chaired this committee, we have increased the funding of the Attorney General's office. We have voted on those budgets, and those monies have been increased. As to the fact that the Attorney General's office has the choice and discretion, that is his authority, to use all of the attorneys at his discretion for the work that he deems necessary. In fact, the Attorney General has stated that where there was one prosecutor when he took office, and that was the decision of the previous Attorney General, there was one, and he has now designated three out of the attorneys in his office. So that is within his discretion without coming before the legislature. As to the funding, I would appreciate a response from the Attorney General's office in regard to these employees. And Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify on the subject of the bill what it did, and then I would defer to members' questions prior to closing comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Kiffmeyer. We'll go back to Senator Osmek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm rather amazed at the comments that Senator Carlson made. We are here discussing a private entity supplying money and funding to a state government agency, that being the Attorney General's office. Where the Freedom Foundation gets their money from, and who they get their money from, and how much they get, they are a private company, a private organization. And if we want to start down that path, I have a list of private organizations I would love to hold to the same accountability. Education Minnesota comes to mind to start with, among others. Maybe they do some reporting now. But it is just amazing that we're going to compare an apple to an orangutan. That's what that comparison was by Senator Carlson. An apple to an orangutan. We are dealing with influence inside of the Attorney General's office, an officer of the state of Minnesota. That is what this bill does. To start a witch hunt in private organizations is out of bounds, Senator Carlson.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Tolkien-Holtze, you were going to take a look specifically at those cases that Senator Corrin asked about. And I would just ask that this committee be made aware of, in writing, any cases that are being funded outside of the Attorney General's office and by who those are being funded. Because I think this brings up, as Senator Osmick said, a very grave concern that we have undue political influence. We have infiltrating what should be the blindness of justice to hold everybody accountable to have this be, even though it's a partisan position, it should be nonpartisan in its operation. The enforcement of the law, and I didn't quite catch all your comments around policy, but this is the policymaking part of the of government. We make the policy, and it's up to the Attorney General to enforce it. And so when I hear what I think of developing policy by using these outside attorneys, it concerns me, because it usurps the authority of the legislature and the people who elected us to be here.
Mistaken. Holtzey, if you want to respond.
Sure, I can. I'll try to respond to all of that. Members and Senator Pratt, you know, the separation of powers is a very big deal. No one denies that. And what I had said was that he sets the legal policy. And the overarching issue of this bill that the office finds especially problematic is dictating how the Attorney General carries out its affairs, carries out the duties. We have to defend every statute. We have to defend every state or represent every state agency. And so trying to restrict the ability to do that, the ability to do that for a separate constitutional office, is not, it goes down a bad road. It's not maintaining separation of powers. With regard to these questions that keep coming up about Bloomberg, I can honestly say I know nothing about this. I've been learning our budget, and no one has told me about this. I am going to go back and certainly look into things, because I'm not, but I want to be clear that I can't accept the assertion that there is any nonprofit money coming in. I will get answers to you in writing. One other point. You know, when we contract with private law firms, or if there's attorneys that are acting under the Attorney General's office, they are all, anyone doing work for the office is under the direction and control of the Attorney General. Under the direction and control of the Attorney General.
Thank you, Ms. Taken Holtzey, I guess. Senator Pratt, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I didn't specifically say Bloomberg. I said anybody funded outside the Attorney General's office. Some of us were concerned that the Attorney General has not always stepped up and defended the laws of the state of Minnesota. And one that comes to mind that Senator Kiffmeyer brought up last session was around election laws. And we went out and started changing dates without the influence of the legislature. And the Attorney General didn't defend those statutes. That's his job. But yet we've got outside attorneys potentially coming in. And while we can say they're working under the direction of the Attorney General, the concern is that we're bringing in politically motivated activist attorneys funded by activist organizations to have undue influence within this department. And we all know that at the end of the day, you answer to the person who writes your check. And so that's the concern here, Ms. Tolson-Holsey, and I think it's extremely important that we have transparency in this project. Whether it's happening, if you can confirm it's not happening, I think that's good. Then there's no concern with Senator Kiffmeyer's bill. But if you know, as Ms. Meek said, you know, if
if you have NRA attorneys. I would like to know that, and I would like to know what they're working on as well. So across the board, I think we need to understand this, and we have to be very cautious about political influence within the justice system.
Thank you. Ms. Taken-Holtze, if you can respond to those in writing to the committee, we'll disseminate that. And Senator Carlson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I have to apologize to the committee and to the public that Alec told me that someone muted the testifier computer, so I heard nothing from the time that I ended my discussion and until about 11:13:15, where it came back on. And then I heard Senator Osmic coming after me for my statements. I'm not sure if he was assailing my intent or just what it is, but I want to make sure that we have transparency. So when Senator Osmic wants transparency, I'm with him, and I'm with Senator Pratt as well, that we want to have transparency. Being on this committee for several years, I've tried to get bills to come through with this transparency from smaller organizations and have been thwarted in that. So the more transparent we can be, the better off we are, and I'm hoping that the Attorney General's office will be as transparent as possible, as will everyone else. So I'm sorry that I didn't hear the follow-up that Senator Kiffmeyer had. I'm hoping that it would be put onto the recording of the committee here so I can review it. But that was something that happened on your side, and it was a mute of that computer for some reason.
Well, thank you, Senator Carlson. Senator Kiffmeyer, your closing comments.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
First of all, I will mention that anybody who wants to hear better and see what's going on in a committee hearing, being here in person is the best way to do that. There are a variety of things that are beneficial when you are in person, and one of them is to help avoid some of these technical issues, which are very complicated in a hybrid setting. I'll get back to the bill, Mr. Chair. So first of all, I will look for the Attorney General's office to confirm or apply this. So on the research that we have done so far, here are some examples of two Bloomberg-funded attorneys using the power of the Minnesota Attorney General's office. What is the work they are doing? Alaskan oil and gas reserve leasing. California's ability to trade emission credits with Quebec. Ratepayers' dispute with the federal FERC in New England, objecting to a challenge to decommission nuclear power plant in Massachusetts. What does this do for the benefit of Minnesotans? Additionally, the Bloomberg-funded attorney generals around the country are refusing to produce documents in response to data practice requests in over 35 matters involving activist attorney generals in other states. As we are hearing today, a representative from the Attorney General's office on this very, very topic did not come prepared to forthcoming give information to this committee that has authority in this area. So we realize that they are claiming that because they have shared interests with these out-of-state activists, they're not going to have to comply with Minnesota's data practices law. There's a lot of questioning here about what is happening, and we're not able to fully get the information we needed. So this particular bill is designed to increase transparency so Minnesotans can understand what their government officials are doing, how they're spending tax dollars for the state. And the question that comes before us, is it appropriate for a private citizen to essentially rent the Attorney General's power as the highest law enforcement official in the state to push their own agenda? What we want is a Minnesota agenda. And the language of this has to do with where the money comes from, not the power of the Attorney General. Where the money comes from is a matter, especially if there are strings attached as to the work that that particular person does. And so I think this is a very important issue for us, very, very important. And again, this is something that should concern us in a bipartisan fashion. As was mentioned here today, what other entity are we going to allow? If this is okay and this is allowed, then what other entity can come in and do the same thing? And this is an important consideration for us, important to the people of Minnesota, that we have listed here and have been very thorough. This bill was introduced on February 3rd, and every single agency has staff who review bill introductions that touch the offices that they have responsibility for. So February 3rd, it was introduced, and now we are having the hearing today. So much less the posting last week of the appointment. As we all know, all of these agencies have the ability and have the staff to review the agendas and to come prepared to those committee hearings with the information that they can anticipate, especially considering the specific substance of this particular bill. So with that, Mr. Chair, that is the information I have for you today, and ask for your support of Senate File 2818 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't normally do this, but Senator Claussen, just a short comment.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was trying to get your attention, but I don't want to supersede the author, and maybe next week I'll make a comment.
Thank you, Senator Claussen. Senator Osmick?
Mr. Chair, request a roll call vote.
Roll call being requested. Roll call, we'll do a roll call. So with that, Senator Kiffmeyer moves that Senate File 2818 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to general orders. The clerk will take the roll.
Senator Howe.
Aye.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Aye.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Claussen.
No.
Senator Fateh.
No.
Senator Curran.
Yes.
Senator Pratt.
Yes.
Senator Osmick.
Aye.
With there being five ayes and three nays, the motion passes and the bill is referred to general orders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that concludes the business today, Mr. Chair, if you'd like to.
That concludes the business of the day. This committee stands adjourned until tomorrow at the same time. This meeting is adjourned.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Well, next week?
Tuesday.
Gee whiz, we're having so much fun. I thought we'd do this again tomorrow, but next week on Tuesday.